everybody. It's your old pal, the Moo Cow, and welcome to another great episode of Indie Film Cafe. And today I am joined by some friends you guys should know from before. We have out there in California, Mr. Moody.
Okay. I didn't know you wanted me to introduce myself. Okay. Jonathan Moody here, co-host of Indie Film Cafe.
Outstanding. And joining us all the way from sunny Indiana, we have with us
Rebecca Reinhart. Might I add that I'm wearing a t-shirt. Paul is wearing a t-shirt, but Mr. California is wearing the thickest hoodie I've ever seen.
I will just tell you, like, my roommate thinks it's nuts, but 70 degrees is chilly to me, so.
Oh my goodness, it's perfect for me. Yeah,
I know.
I'm like 74 in my house, so okay, I get there.
Yeah.
There you go. Very nice. All right. Well, today is a special treat. I've been kind of holding this one back and waiting for the right moment to spring it on you folks, because we are going to be doing a totally batshit, balls to the wall, crazy wackadoodle movie from Thailand. From Thailand, called Hanuman and the Five Riders, 1974. My goodness gracious, and the time was right, and I sprung it on these two folks, and boy howdy, I don't think they were quite ready for it.
Nope.
No, I'm born ready for this shit. Come on.
She loves this stuff. I don't know. I'm a little different. Like, this movie sort of reminded me of The Magic Lizard, which Paul made me freaking watch back last year or so. And that
same director.
Same director?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
No wonder it was fucking retarded.
don't get me wrong. There was a lot of head shaking like this all night. My kid kept coming in the room, who I'll just preface it by saying, I give you so much credit, Paul. Like, you... Like, when people say, oh, we're going to, like, watch an obscure movie, you know, and they're like, something, it's like, oh, yeah, I watched it on VHS when I was a kid or whatever. No, you find the most random shit, and this is so random, and the dub is obviously, like, a fan dub. It's a parody dub. From what I can read, there's never been an English dub, and there's never been English subtitles. My kid walks in, and my kid is about all things Japanese, you know, like from, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, all the way to now. And he's like, is this a Kamen Rider movie? And I'm like, yeah. And so then he starts getting out, but like, this isn't an official Kamen Rider movie, is it? And I'm like, I don't think so.
No. Well, we're going to come back after we hear some mood music, and we will talk about that and all kinds of stuff when we come back on the flip side. All right, and we are back. So, let me get a little background on this here movie that we all experienced. Okay, the director, it was a gentleman by the name of Sampote Sands. That's his sort of Americanized version of his name. His real name is Sampote Sanduan Chai, something like that. Thai names are very difficult to pronounce in English. And he is a director and producer and production house owner. He owns Chayo Productions. And he's a guy that did all kinds of stuff in the 70s and 80s and into the 90s. And he actually apprenticed at Toho Studio. So he knew all the folks at Toho.
Yeah.
And he knew all the folks who were doing all the special effects. He also did special effects. So he knew all the Japanese special effects. He knew all the gaiju kinds of stuff, all the big rubber-suited monster things, all the models, all that kind of stuff. He was very, very familiar with that. And he decided he was going to start doing that kind of film in Thailand. And so he began to make these films. I have seen three of them. I the first one I saw was Crocodile, which is really bad. Second one was Magic Lizard, which we discussed earlier. I showed Mr. Moody. We did that on What the Fuck Friday.
Yeah, but so okay, real quick, because What the Fuck Friday is a show we do on Indie Film Cafe's YouTube stuff, so it's not one of our podcasts or anything. However, Paul makes me sit down and just watch this, like, wacky fucking movie where there's a guy in a lizard costume running around doing God knows what and all these other things. Most of it made absolutely no sense. So when I'm watching this movie, I'm like, there's a lot of similarities in, like the dubbing sounds kind of similar where the characters are talking, but I almost feel like it wasn't what it was originally supposed to be saying. And that's exactly what it was with Magic Lizard. I think they were just trying to make it up as they went along. Like, this is what this looks like they're saying, you know? And that's what Magic Lizard was all about. So when I saw this, I was like, I did not know it was the same director, but now it totally makes sense.
And the thing is, all his movies can frankly fit into What the Fuck Fridays, but I wanted to save one for Indie Film Cafe, and this is the one that I decided to go with because it's just like out there. And frankly, after reading some of the other movies that I have not seen, I'd say that the ones that we're looking at are some of the tamer ones, because he's got some really crazy, crazy films. And that's sort of one of the marks of a Sam Pote Sands production is, you know, it's kind of like Shaw Brothers on acid, taken way, way, way over the top. Which is a lot of fun, but it's also pretty much
acid. I think it's some kind of drug. It's some kind of drug that we do not know about in Western culture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The drug that doesn't exist in America.
I know. Yeah. So, okay, there is a bit of a complicated history with this particular film and with Sam Pote Sands.
Oh.
I mentioned the fact that he worked with Toho Studios and he met a lot of people there. Well, he also met the guy who ended up creating Tsuru Boriya Productions. Sorry about that. They're the guys who did Ultraman, and he had some supposed handshake deal by which the rights to Ultraman, in his eyes, went to him if the guy ever passed away. Well, the guy did pass away. His son took over, and he decided that he had the ownership of Ultraman and all the Ultraman properties. And it was like, well, no. That was debated for a nice long time, and then he did what he normally does and just didn't care and made a movie without the rights. So he made this movie in 2000 called what was it called? It's like Ultraman Super something or other. And it's a terrible, terrible film. And he made it without getting any rights to anything. And then in 2008, the lawsuit came back and said, yeah, you don't have the rights to Ultraman. Sorry, dude. And something similar happened with this film because the Hanuman are manga characters that were part of a Japanese television show, which was already part of a film called Five Riders versus King Dark that he stole half the movie from.
Right.
And he just decided, I'm going to go ahead and make my own version. He originally went to them and said, can I have the rights? And they said, no, he did it anyway. So this is a bootleg of a film that he took bits and pieces from that film. He took it from another film called Hanuman and the Seven... Riders or something, Seven Ultramen, that's what it was. There's half part of that movie in there too. And he made all these sort of weird wraparounds and he put it out there and it's without anybody's permission because that's sort of the thing he would do. You know? And you remember in Magic Lizard, he was borrowing stuff from his other films.
Right.
Taking it left and right.
Borrowing, yeah. And you know, it's so funny that you say that because, like, Paul, if you ever noticed on the show, you tend to actually find a lot of movies where like two or three or four movies are cobbled together into one, and this isn't the first, you know. I think my favorite being Rhett Finkaboo-Boo, which seemed to be two different movies. Even though it was actually one movie, but you know, whatever. I don't know, Rebecca, have you ever seen Rat Finkaboo-Boo?
No, I haven't, but it sounds like about four movies put together just from the title.
It's awesome. Yes, it's a wonderful movie.
Oh, I would probably love it.
You would.
You know, what I was going to say about this, like when we were doing our research, which there's not a whole lot online. So that's why I was like, that's why I kept telling my kid, I'm like, hey, listen, I'm like, Paul is going to school us totally tomorrow. Because like, I actually went to bed and every like 15 minutes, my door would open. Okay, so I'm looking this up and like, let it go. But he also the same year made a movie, Hahnemann and it's like Hahnemann and Ultraman. It had like four or five different titles. But if you look at IMDb, both movies have the same description. And so we were confused because I went into this thinking it was an Ultraman movie.
Yeah, no, this is actually supposed to have been a sequel to Hahnemann and the Seven Ultraman.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So Hahnemann and the Seven Ultraman came out first because I figured he could get away with the one, he could get away with the other because, you
now,
know, why not?
Now, I can't say this, like, for sure, but from what my kid can find out, that is actually considered canon in the Ultraman universe.
Okay, yeah, I don't really remember much about Ultraman other than what I used to see when I was a kid on TV. We used to show the TV show Ultraman. But I do know that there's this whole range of properties that go on from Japanese TV and movies,
toys
and all kinds of stuff. And it has been sitting in limbo. And the funny thing is, Mr. Moody, you sent me a link to one of the latest things that's coming out because they finally, you know, it's been like 17 years or something like that that this lawsuit was dragging out between Sands Company and the Subaru-Yara production company over who actually had the ownership of the rights to Ultraman. So it's finally been cleared up, even though, of course, he kind of went and made his own movie regardless. He just did it anyway because that's who he is.
Right.
But yeah, well, you just sent me that link, which
I know.
Cool.
Well, I sent it to you because, well, A, when I was looking up Hahnemann and the Five Riders, I looked up, it said something about Ultraman all over it. But then when I watched the movie, they never, once mentioned Ultraman, so it confused the heck out of me. So I looked up, so it was really funny because that day, or the day earlier, I'm not sure which one, but I was on Twitter, and Jeff Gomez, who is who does a company called Starlight Runner, and he does, like, transmedia stuff. He's, like, a transmedia guru. Remember, Paul, I sent you that video, Transmedia Storytelling, where he's there giving, like, advice on how to do it, like, basically a TED Talk on it. And he actually, I guess, is helping them with the transmedia aspects of Ultraman. So he's really excited about bringing it back and everything. So he posted that link, and I looked at it, and it said Ultraman. I was like, wait, is this connected? But I didn't know because, like, when I was watching the movie, there's no Ultraman. Like, it's Hahnemann, and it's the Kamen Riders and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, like, what you have to explain to us, where does Ultraman fit in this?
Well,
and again, actually, like I said, John, if you look at the movie he did the same year that was Hahnemann and like the Seven Ultraman or whatever, on IMDb, it has the same description. And I think somebody just copied and pasted simply.
Oh, because, like maybe it was a mess up on IMDb. Okay.
And the thing is, too, is stylistically, I know we talked about, or I think one of us mentioned, you know, that this was similar to Power Rangers. Stylistically, this is a lot more similar to Ultraman, the old Ultraman show back, you know, in the 60s than it is, even though it later you can definitely see connections to Power Rangers too. But there's you know, stylistically, and because temporally they're a lot closer to each other, so there's definitely a lot of crossover there. Although, and here's the other thing, is apparently one of the arguments that Sampodi Sands had in the lawsuit was that he actually came up with the term Ultraman, which apparently has been backed up. So the thing is that he couldn't prove a lot of that stuff. So that's kind of one reason why the lawsuit went against him. But the Ultraman thing was always something that he wanted to do, and because of the lawsuit, he did some of it. But the Hanuman stuff, he was his way of taking like local Thai stuff and mixing that with the popular Japanese stuff, because you know the Japanese and Toho and all those guys, they were putting out all this stuff, and everybody in Southeast Asia was lapping it up. It was very, very popular. So why not be able to take something that's local and mix that in there? And
take a god in your religion, make him look like a complete idiot, dancing around like a jester,
and sounding like an idiot.
Right. Hanuman it's funny because you know they're mainly Buddhist over there, and Hanuman is a Hindu god. He's a Hindu god of strength and the destroyer of evil, and he's part man, part monkey, and he's pretty much an idiot. But that whole thing with the kid Pico who gets shot, and the giant Hanuman, that is all of that is taken from Hanuman and the seven Ultraman. So that's part of what he ripped off there. So when he's small and doofy, that's sort of the stuff that Sand shot for this film.
Yeah.
And that was my like thought as we were going through this and we were trying to separate it out. I'm like, well, this guy took tons of footage from this other movie that wasn't his, or it was like the same studio, whatever. But he also did that other movie. I'm like, I wouldn't doubt that tons of the footage that he did for this other movie that was an Ultraman movie wasn't put into this. And yeah.
Right. So I'd say about 40 to 50% of the first half of the film is stuff that he took from Five Riders versus King Dark, which was already put out, which was somebody else's intellectual property that he just took without asking. I mean, he did ask. They said no. He took it anyway.
Right.
It was the same studio, I believe, though, right?
No, it was Japanese. It was actually, it's funny. The movie Five Riders versus King Dark is a movie version of the TV, the Japanese TV show. So the movie was taken from the TV show. He was taken from the movie, which was taken from the TV show. I know. It's very complicated. And where do we get into the dubbing? Because I got some research for you on the dub.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. But is there anybody out there, anybody at all, who could possibly discuss what the hell is going on plot-wise with this film? Is anybody going to give it a shot?
I don't. I thought you would, and that was the... Because I imagined you had seen it more than once, like I had.
Well, that doesn't help.
You know, it doesn't? It still doesn't?
No.
I mean, I could give my Mystery Science Theater 1000, like, plot wrap-up, but...
Go for it.
No. Okay, so these five dudes who look like ants, but they're like superheroes, are riding through... I guess they're riding on their bikes from Japan to Thailand, waving at everybody with some really awesome music and there's a dude, a King Dark, who is sometimes like normal size, sometimes big, and there's no explanation to when he is. He likes blood of women. He has these thugs who wear these black masks with like white eyes and a spider on them. And he has like mythical creatures doing the deed for him, like Neptune and Pericles and Cerberus. They're all like hanging out with him. And then we end up with the King of Hell. I don't know. And we keep going back to hell at least a few times and it makes absolutely no sense. But the one coherent part is there's a professor who King Dark thinks can help him with his greatest creation. And so they end up taking the professor, Frankenbat, which I'm sure is not really what they called him. But actually, if you look at him, there's nothing else you could call this creature.
Exactly.
So funny.
They end up using his girlfriend as a pawn and like draining some of her blood, like little at a time, so that he will use his skills to help create Franken that to, and then that's when it's dot, dot, dot. And this is when we go into, it's a cast of thousands.
And we have animal dudes.
Animal, Thai boxing animal dudes. And we've got the one purple outfit sidekick dude who, so that's the basic plot, I guess. I guess King Dark is the bad guy. Hanuman shows, I didn't even mention him.
Oh my goodness.
Fucking in the title.
Right.
And he always shows up at the very beginning and the very end.
Yep. Right. He's like a deus ex machina, except he's half monkey and an idiot.
That's the best way to describe him.
And sometimes he's just a little white clown jester, and sometimes he's like Godzilla.
Yeah.
Moody, tell me he did not remind you of Magic Lizard.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, like his voice, too.
Yes.
Like, you know, the little kid voice kind of sounding, you know, where he's like high, kind of higher pitched than everybody else. And kind of, Exactly.
Okay. not to take over this podcast, but we do need to talk about this first. And you said you know about this. So when you're watching this, obviously this dub is done. Like, it could have just been the three of us sitting there like, what the hell do you think they're saying? Oh, well, you know, like, well, okay. Breaking Bad and Ostrich egg powered, you know, explosive. Like, obviously, it's just the people who were like, whatever. So what's the story with this? And are they the same people who did Magic Lizard?
It's possible. I mean, one of the things when I first saw this, the first time I saw this, and you know, I'm the dub was already just because this happens a lot with crazy Asian films. But when King Gart goes, goody, goody, gumdrops, I mean, I nearly pissed myself the first time I heard that. I swear to God, it was just so funny. But so, you know, just like you guys, I was like, this can't be serious. This has to be a parody. Somebody is screwing around here. That's the only possible explanation. I went to my friend, Andrew Leavell, whom some of you guys might know. He's the guy, he's an Australian guy. He owned a video store out there, and he used to have tons and tons and tons of movies, most of which are Asian films and Middle Eastern films. And he's kind of like extremely, extremely knowledgeable. And he ended up making that great documentary film, The Search for Weng Weng, which I highly recommend. He went to the Philippines, he did all the shots there. He has talked to all the movie distributors in Asia. He's talked to tons of producers and directors. He knows what's going on with this thing. And I was so he's the guy. So I went to him. I was like, dude,
well,
what the
hell?
Knows
what's going on the best that anybody could know.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
I mean, he's like the one guy that was even more obsessed with Weng Weng than I was. And I've been obsessed for years. And this guy went out and made his movie and went to the Philippines and tracked everything down, tracked down the director. Track down everyone. It was great. So I asked him about it. And he's like, oh, yeah. I said, is this just some kind of crazy fan thing? Or did they just go for the cheapest possible dub the guy could possibly do? He's like, yeah, he would have gone for the cheapest possible dub because that's just what they ended up doing. In Asia especially, the market is so huge and the laws are very, very different. So you don't have to worry so much about copyright out there. And, you know, it was just, there are different schools of dubs that are offered out there. Like the high-end one tend to be, like the ones that Shaw Brothers use, are located in Hong Kong and, of all places, Italy. And you get a lot of expatriates from England or the United States living there who are either actors or have voice actor backgrounds or sometimes none at all. And they would get hired on to do these things. The thing is that it all kind of depended on the quality and the style of that particular group. Some of them would take the scripts and go over them line by line, or at least get most of what's going on. Other times, they would not be given much, you know, like you might be only given like part of a scene where they say, okay, in this 5-minute scene, King Dark yells and threatens the Hanuman. And they would have to make up their own shit.
Yeah.
And in other times, they would get nothing and would have complete license to have to fill in everything they could. And we're already talking about a film which half of it is already coming out in Japanese and then translated into Thai. And who the hell knows what these people are speaking when they're there, if they're the locals.
You know what? Any of those people who have the masks on, I guarantee you would not be able to hear what the fuck they were saying anyway.
Oh, sure. Oh, sure. So in this particular case, you mentioned that there was no United States release. Well, that's because no United States distributor in their right mind was going to touch this film because, well, A, because it's ridiculous crap, but B, because it's stealing other people's intellectual property. There's no way they would touch this. However, that does not mean that Sanpony Sands did not try. So there is an actual American or English dub. I actually found there's a Turkish dub. There's a number of different dubs that are out there in order to capture more money, because that's really what they were offered. And as soon as he could find somebody who would do the distribution, the money's already his, so he doesn't have to worry about whether the dub is okay or not. It doesn't matter at that point. He's already made his money. So he went with the cheapest possible dub. Uh-huh. Didn't care what they said. Just didn't care. Whatever. Doesn't matter. And I have actually sat through another dub. I think it was Chinese or something like that. I couldn't tell. But there was English subtitles. And the English subtitles was a lot closer to probably what was going on in the actual film. And even then, some of the dialogue was kind of strange. And you're like, what the hell?
And that's kind of what I found myself wanting, because I knew, like, they weren't saying chick. It's 1974, whatever. But, like, I knew those weren't the words that they were using. But,
right.
So, Paul, if you can find me, like, a link to, like, the Indeed.com or whatever of this particular, like, low-budget translation movie thing, I think that's my goal in life.
Oh, yeah, I know. Trust me. And the thing is that there is actually a lot of stuff out there. The problem is very little of it is in English. So that makes it very, very problematic if you don't speak something, either Japanese or Chinese or Thai or something out there. Even Turkish.
Yeah, but if there's anything where they don't care and I can just make up shit, I'm so there.
Well, and like I said, I talked with Andrew about it. He's like, this is what happens. It all kind of depends. There are dubbing groups out there that they were given creative license to say whatever they thought would work. Whether it was funny or not, it didn't really matter, because the deal, like I said, the deal was done. So the guy already made his money. Mm-hmm. Say what you want to say.
Do you guys know the anime? It's a fairly recent anime called Ghost Stories.
I've heard of it. I've not seen it. I've heard of it as well.
It's probably a very much more modern version of what you're talking about. Like, it was popular in Japan, and then it got, like, bought out, like, so they could do an English dub, and apparently the English dub was horrible. And, like, just to make sure they could, like, recoup some of their money, they ended up selling it to another English dubbing firm. It was American. And they told them, you can do whatever the hell you want as long as you keep the stories intact. Like, each episode is another, like, is a tale of a ghost or whatever. And it's like, you have your characters. Keep their names, whatever. And a lot of it was ad-libbed. It was just, it's so batshit crazy, and it's hilarious.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, yes. And that actually is something we should do on this show.
Here's the other thing, too. The distributor who did do this in Asia was Shaw Brothers, okay?
Oh, wow.
Shaw Brothers were like the granddaddy of Asian cinema.
Yeah, cinema. There.
And they had a group of dubbers in Hong Kong that they worked with that were really professional. Shaw Brothers didn't screw around. When they made a serious film, they made a serious film, and they were high quality all the way. And I'm telling you, those were definitely not the dubbers that Shaw Brothers used in their productions at all.
Yeah.
Not even close.
Well, I wanted to say, like, I think I mentioned this when we were all chatting with each other, but this really reminded me of, like, What's Up, Tiger Lily, where it's just, like, ridiculously stupid, like, where it obviously they just redubbed it and made it so that, it sort of made sense to people because, like, but you could tell, like, there were times when people weren't even moving their lips. Yes. And the people were actually talking. And I was like, whoa, like, that doesn't work. Like, why did they have to add that, you know, in, like, there?
We also mentioned Kung Pao, Enter the Fist.
Enter the Fist, yeah.
Right.
Bisbolian from Kentucky Fried movie, which that was like, you know, but just all these movies where it's like a kind of play into that, like, this isn't right. Exactly like
the difference is that this is not a film where Samponi San said was, you know, made the with the intention of making it a ridiculous, you know, version of that. He just didn't care. The other thing is that you see this sort of thing all the time. Remember Wang Wang? Remember some of the ridiculous dialogue in Wang Wang?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. The butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. As long as they kept to the general idea of the story, like you said, Rebecca, they were pretty much given free rein to plug in some of their other stuff. And you can tell these guys were having some fun. They were looking at this. They could see how ridiculous it was. You know, they were calling, like, the animal dudes, you know, the low rent high monsters.
Tie-boxing animal dudes.
So funny.
And you watch like half of the movie and you're like, what the fuck are they talking about? Tie-boxing animal dudes. And then you're like, oh, it's the tie-boxing animal dudes.
Yeah. Like, it seemed like the Americans, like, it made it dumber, you know, like, or whatever. Like, when they talk, it's just like, the movie already is dumb, but, like, we have now just took it to a new level.
And that's what I love about this film. It was so ridiculous as it was, even with a regular dub, but the fact is, these cheap dubbers are like, man, this is a piece of crap. We're going to do our job, and we're going to have fun with it.
Uh-huh.
I want to be a cheap dubber. That's what I want to be when I grow up. I want to be a cheap dubber.
Right. Yeah. Right. I'm sure Paul can find these really bad movies that nobody's ever heard of, and then Absolutely. We can redub them.
Absolutely. Well, oh, you know, yes. And that's why I wanted to do distribution, man, because you can get a lot of these foreign films that no one's ever seen, that's never been released, and just remove the soundtrack and put your own.
It sounds great. Sign me up.
So, Paul, yes, I'm totally there. Give me 50 cents, I'll do it. So, Paul, what is your best estimation from the research that you've done? What is your best estimation of the year of this dub? Or at least decade? Like 90s, maybe?
No, I think it came out relatively, I would say mid-70s, I believe. I think that there was probably several attempts at it because it doesn't seem consistent. So it wouldn't surprise me if, you know, it was done over a course of years, because there's definitely some stuff that they talk about later on that I think, you know, would not have been said in the 70s.
Right. Like they say, like I said, chicks, the way they said that. And like, there's some things where you hear it and it's like, you know, that the microphone is like really good quality.
Yeah, it's inconsistent. It wouldn't surprise me if part of this was dubbed in the 80s as well, sometime in the 80s, you know, and like there's little jabs at America. I don't know if you saw that, like, oh, I have to come back because the Republicans are deporting me. Okay, just weird stuff like that. It's like, okay, that came out of nowhere,
right? Like, and it didn't even like make any sense to the rest of the plot, like, at all. But it was sort of funny. I mean, it worked.
It was funny, and a lot of the stuff was kind of relevant to the plot, like when they're like, oh, but what about dogs? Let's go get dogs, because, you know, dog blood here gives you a shiny, healthy coat. And they bring dogs, right?
Or so when, like, he, like, gives that little hug, and he's like, that was hot.
Yes. my favorite. My favorite one is, he was like, the guy's like on his leg, and he says, you're pulling my leg. And I was just like, really? Like, they had to make a joke out of just something so small like that? That was just great. I mean, it was just
hear it ticking. It is a time bomb.
Time bomb. Which is the Republican thing was obviously, like, popped in by somebody, because the guy never went to America. Like, listen, the other thing, they brought dogs in a cage to the guy.
Yeah.
Went with the joke. Like, the joke.
And the thing is, the wacky dub is icing on a cake that's already very, very rich and creamy. Okay? Think about this. As bad as the dub was, remember, there was a 5-minute tickling scene where the guy peed on the guy in purple in his face.
And that, they're all laughing.
that is Sam Pody Sands right there. Because just like in Magic Lizard, just like in Crocodile, there are these weird bits that he thinks, I guess, is funny, that he will put into his film. Just when you think that this is a movie that might be aimed at kids, all of a sudden there's nudity, there's violence, there's gore, there's bad language. And it's like, what the hell? What are you trying to show to kids here?
Speaking of which, do you know what this reminded me a lot of that I was thinking about when I was watching it? Sergeant Kabuki Man.
Oh, yeah.
NYPD. You know, which, definitely. I mean, yeah. And so just a lot of the cheesiness and the silliness and the whatever. But, like, I mean,
casual
that's a
violence.
Yeah, this is a little bit more over the top than that one. And that's bad for, you know, if you're worse, you're more over the top than a trauma movie, you know, there's something a little off there, you know?
Oh, yeah. But, you know.
So I will say that the ones that, like, took this out of being potentially a kid's movie is Where They Were in Hell.
Right.
And it's like, those who think about adultery have to climb up these poles with spikes for eternity.
While they're being stabbed with spears and there's blood all over them. I'm like, what the hell?
When anyone who considers poisoning soup with arsenic is going to be put in this bowl of soup. You know, you got these guys in these skeleton suits, the blonde wigs, like pushing these like naked.
And they're all like, ah! Yeah. It was so crazy. Yeah, and then the peeing scene, like I mentioned earlier, because remember in Magic Lizard, you get to see the wonderful ox open his anus and take a shit. that's the kind of stuff that Sempody Sands likes to put in there because I guess he thinks it's funny. So that's part of his style.
It's a good pee joke, but
I don't know if that was very funny to me, but, you know.
I know. Well, and here's another thing, just to get back to the dub for just a brief second. I went back, and I specifically went to look at the piece that was lifted from Hanuman versus the Seven Ultraman, where Hanuman, giant Hanuman, is trying to kill the three evil guys that are in hell. And during that entire time, during the Sempody Sands version, you know, the stupid monkey boys running around going, oh, Rikishi! That is almost entirely silent in the actual regular version, the one that wasn't dubbed for English. You know, I'm not saying there was no noise. I'm just saying the stupid little Hanuman wasn't making all of those ridiculous sounds. He wasn't saying anything. He was just killing shit. And the tone was very, very different. Mm-hmm. It was still weird, but it lacked a lot of the, you know, the lighthearted comedy stuff that was inadvertently or not added with this English dub. So again, you have to wonder how much of that is the director, how much of that is the whoever ended up paying for the dubbing, or if it was just the dubbers having fun.
I feel like it was the dubbers having fun. Like, I think that the American English dub is way more juvenile than the Asian market would have expected. So this feels like if you got like the people from Jackass to do a fucking movie dub of an Asian movie or something, you know, like just
if you
ridiculous.
Got the three of us to do the dub of this movie.
I don't know. I
the three of us.
I've seen a lot of wackadoodle dubs, my friend. This is. I don't want to say it's par for the course. It's a little bit more than normal, but a lot of them are as bad as this.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, especially when you get into some more of his other work, which I'm willing to bet he probably went back to the same group and that he could pay, you know, like 10 cents to dub for him and just said, here.
Oh, well, he probably already had like 90% of the footage for the movie anyway.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And it's just cost cutting. And, you know, it's not a mistake when, you know, you go and you start reading up about Sampodi Sands, and he has the reputation of being the Thai Ed Wood. You know, it's just the way that he wants to cut corners here and there. Although, frankly, I wouldn't call him Ed Wood so much as I would call him Roger Corman.
Or how about Coleman Francis, you know?
Or Coleman Francis, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I would take him down to Roger Corman. That doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, and Ed Wood, even Ed Wood,
Ed Wood was original.
I know. Look, I feel Ed Wood would scoff at this movie or whatever, because like I feel like at least he had a little heart. This guy does not seem to have any heart, you know.
Right. I was thinking Corman as like the terror, where he's like, oh, we have 2 extra days. We've already paid for the set and paid for the costumes and paid for the actors. Let's make a whole other movie so we can squeeze more money out.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I messaged to you guys at one point. I was like, I swear, there's like 250 people in this fucking
movie. Right, exactly.
Oh, yeah. And every time, like, and the end scene or the end-ish fight where it's like you've got the thugs and the Thai boxing dudes and the Kamen Riders and the girls from college and the professor. Like, oh my God, there's like 50 people in this fight.
Oh yeah. Well, and of course, remember, you know, half of them come from other properties, so they weren't actually there when he was just shooting his wraparound scenes. I did want to mention that the actor who plays the professor is named Yoche Matsukawan. He is actually in just about all of Sampodi Sam's films, and he was in Magic Lizard. He was in a bunch of other stuff. He was a local Thai actor, and he actually had quite a career. He was in a whole lot of other Asian films. Yeah, he wasn't bad. And some of the acting, it's not really that bad, really. I mean, you can't blame them for the final product in some cases. In other cases, clearly they just said let them go, do whatever the hell you want, be as crazy as you want to go. But, you know, like, he wasn't bad, and some of the girls weren't too bad.
Yeah, Julie.
Julie. I love Julie.
Oh, yeah.
Can I ask you, Paul, do you know anything about Can Chu? Like, there's a dude in the movie named Can Chu. I was like, really? Like, that's his name? But yes, that is his name, Can Chu.
I don't recall which idiot that was.
I don't know. Like, I wanted to make jokes, like, you know, is he related to Can't Bite, you know? But I was just like, I don't know who this guy is, because they never, they never give you a credits at the end.
No, that's typical of a lot of Asian films as well, because, again, cutting costs. Why spend the extra money when you don't have to?
Yeah, why give credit to the people who made the fucking movie?
Jonathan, I mean, like, did you question the name of the professor at all?
No. What's the professor's name?
Wizzo.
I don't remember that name necessarily.
Or something like that. It was like Wizzo, but it was said in a very quick, weird manner.
Because of my PhD, I've created a monster. It was so wacky, but yeah. So this is a really good introduction to the wacky world of Sampodi Sands. In addition to Hanuman and the Five Riders, in addition to Crocodile in 1980, we also have, of course, Six Ultra Brothers versus the Monster Army, which I think is yet another one of these kind of mashup things. He also did something called Fra Red Marie in 1981. Magic Lizard came out in 1985. He did a couple other ones that just looked like, there's one called Fra Troy Bat or something like that. A lot of these are just never got any kind of dubbing or any kind of translation at all. And it just looks like the most wackadoodle thing I have ever seen in my life. And it's just crazy.
Can you tell us a little bit about Crocodile? Because that just sounds normal. Like, is that like a normal, boring movie of his or what?
That's the one film of his that got an actual proper American release. So you could actually find this in corner video stores back in the day. And you saw at least half of it when you watched Magic Wizard. So all that crap you saw of the stupid alligator, the big rubber ridiculous thing. Yeah, that's all taken from this film.
I think you mentioned that on the Magic Lizard thing. Okay. Yeah.
Because that was my introduction to Sanpouty Sands way back in the day, you know, back in the 80s when I first saw that. It's just, this was just typical. He would shoot some things and then he would recycle stuff over and over and over again to pad the budget, you know? It's just what you did.
Well, it sounds like the typical thing that you usually show us. So, yeah, there you go. Yeah, I don't know how do you find these things, Paul?
Oh, dude, like, I've been seeing movies for years and years and years, and I always try to get them. I'm one of those collector nerds. When I see stuff that I love, I go out of my way to try and find it one way or another. I have lists. Yeah. I go looking for things. You know, you saw tons of movies that I've got.
Well, I was at Dark Delicacies the other day, and I saw a couple movies, and I sent them pictures to Paul. And, of course, he had never seen these two movies. We'll mention them another time, but he had never seen these two movies. So, of course, like, the next second I get, like, a text, oh, I bought this movie, and I bought that one, too, you know? So, just, he has to get every freaking bad movie
whatever. I have a problem. When it comes to bad films, I can't help myself. It's just, you know, it's not drugs or alcohol. What can I tell you?
Not a problem.
Hey, it's not, Rebecca loves it.
I'm the same way when it comes to 80s slashers. Like, sure. I mean, I will scour a list and be like, I will find I will go through years and be like, I need to find every slasher that was made in 1984. And I'm going to watch every single one of them and find every single one of them. And, like, sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. But, like, anytime somebody recommends something, I'm like, I don't think
And it's just as hard for you because a lot of that stuff never got released in DVD.
On DVD.
Much less Blu-ray.
So you have to, like, hope that somebody had a VHS and they ripped it and put it on YouTube.
But, right. Yeah. So if you're like me, you have a number of different internet sources where somebody either has a copy and is selling it, or they're selling dubbed versions, or they're selling, you know, rips. You know, I'll buy a rip. I don't care. You know, if I could just buy it normally, I would. But a lot of these movies, you can't. So it's the only way you can see them.
Yeah, I watched. I don't even remember what the movie was, but I watched one online the other day that was like a 80s slasher, and the subtitles were in Greek, and most of the time they took up the entire screen. I'm like, I don't care. I don't want to watch it.
Aw. Well, you know, and that's the other thing with, with that is that you, at least with 80s slasher films, there's a distribution companies, a lot of them, that are, like, looking for that. So they're trying to find them. Nobody wants this Hanneman movie. Like, nobody wants to even touch it. Like, all the movies Paul picks, all the movies Rebecca picks, people actually want.
I will disagree. There's a big market for it in Japan and in Southeast Asia. They love the Hanneman stuff. The problem is that this is a movie that actually kind of ruins it. You know, I mean, the fact that they're there, that's never explained. You know, they're actually, I think Rebecca mentioned, these are
They ride their bikes from Japan to Thailand.
Yeah, they're supposed to be these ant superheroes. Like, Rider number one is actually Red Ant. But that never comes across in this film. And none of the manga stuff that made the kids program really, really popular or made the movies popular in Japan ever really comes through, because Sanpouty Sands is not really interested in promoting any of the Hanneman stuff. He's just using it to promote, you know, for his own ends.
He's just stealing it. He's just
stealing it.
So, yeah,
and
you're right.
Here's the thing. Like, I mean, like the Kamen Riders and stuff, you know, Ultraman, those are all properties. When you say nobody wants to touch these movies, well, nobody can, because there are copyright.
Exactly. Like, so nobody can touch this. But when I
slipped through the cracks.
In America.
Yeah.
In America, no one's, I mean, no, like I said, no distributor is going to touch this with a 10-foot pole because of all the stuff there. There's no provenience. But the problem is, the United States has these tough copyright laws, but it's not the same anywhere else in the world. That's why Turkey has a long history of making rip-off Turkish versions of films, which I have yet to bring to you guys. I can't wait to do Turkish Star Wars and Turkish Batman and Turkish Superman. They're all ridiculous and terrible. They're somebody else's intellectual properties, but the Turks don't care. They just want to make a fun movie that their people are going to enjoy in their language and with their customs and their culture and have fun. They don't care about American copyright laws. Same thing in Southeast Asia. Same thing in a lot of places. Pakistan, the Middle East, Russia, all kinds of places don't play by our rules. And it's very popular over there, but you come to the United States, the brakes full stop. You can't do that here. Yeah.
I think Turkish Star Wars was something that you were planning to do for the first season and then just didn't do.
Dude, I have 200 movies at least that I wrote down that I wanted to show in the first season. I just haven't gotten to.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll get to it, I'm sure. Because, I mean, as far as I know, we're going to keep doing IFC for a long-ass time.
That I hope so.
You can only do, you and I can only do 12 episodes per year each, so there's only so much we can cover.
And that's where something like What the Fuck Fridays was born, because we had to have another outlet, and there's a whole bunch of movies out there that frankly our previous co-host just Jen was simply not going to sit through. It was either too violent or had too much boobage or too much something, and she was just not going to sit through it, not at all.
Yeah, we haven't met Rebecca then. And everything. Right. Yeah. So
these are not obstacles for me. No.
I like
Turkish Star Wars. Sounds great. I'll watch it.
Yeah, of course you will.
Oh, let me tell you, I found something much worse than that. Brazilian Star Wars is much, much worse.
Oh God. That sounds like a terrible movie.
And that's a movie I didn't even know existed up until maybe 6 months ago. So the wonderful, wonderful world of stinky movies is just bottomless. There's so much out there. Mm-hmm. Even someone like myself, who's dedicated most of my life to watching and finding and collecting these films, even I have not seen all that's out there. Even Andrew Levo, who specializes in Asian and Middle Eastern stuff, has not seen or collected all the stuff that's out there. There's tons.
Goals.
And a lot of this stuff is on YouTube. You can find it, but a lot of it isn't. So you never know. That's why I love these shows, so we can bring these to light and share them and basically torment our friends and make them feel awful by watching these.
Watch this.
Well,
speaking
of which, we're going to have to go to our rating system now, because I think we've been talking for about 50 minutes already.
Okay.
This went by really fucking quickly. I don't know if you guys thought so too, but like this topic was, there's a lot
There's, again, cast of thousands. We haven't gotten to half of the plot points. Plot points and air quotes.
And now we can build my Frankenbat animal dudes, minefields made out of ostrich eggs, and conquer the world, except for Oakland.
Fucking California. That's right.
My God.
So crazy.
To go to the roll call of all the monsters.
Too. I know, because there's a bunch more that we didn't discuss.
Chicken dude and cow dude and Porker.
Oh, Porker, who didn't even know. One of them thought he was Porker, and the other one was I'm Porker.
Idiot, I'm Porker. And so, of course, chicken dude goes around going, it's just so ridiculous. Oh my God! I showed this to Lenore the other night because I had to. And like 10 minutes in, she's like, "Is this movie over yet? How long is it?" I'm like, "It's only been 10 minutes." She goes, "This is like being on drugs, on hard drugs."
Did she stop after 10 minutes?
No, she soldiered on through. But she said this was the worst thing she had seen since Actium Maximus. Though
I wish we had brought her on here. I mean, even for a fourth person.
I know.
Or just a secondary opinion.
Yeah,
an outsider, an innocent bystander.
She would have gave us a scientific approach to it, wouldn't she?
I kept in the back of my mind, because we are kind of in theory maybe going to be doing some extra stuff for our Patreon. Maybe I could do a podcast with her talking about it and have it for Patreon only folks.
That would be great, actually. I would love that.
But getting back to the ratings, this is tough. This is one of those movies that you look at it and I'm like, I don't know if this is a 10 or a 1.
Right.
Or if it's a 20 or a 0 or anything. I mean, it's really, really, really difficult. And, you know, I kind of have to divorce myself from the dub, even though the dub is what makes it so much more fun. Because I don't believe the dub is exactly the original director's intent for the film. I have to try and take a lot of that wackiness out. But even given that, and the fact that he stole stuff from everywhere else and cobbled together things, I mean, this movie is very much its own Frankenbat. You know, it's a Frankenstein monster created from different languages and different films and other people's stuff. To me, if this isn't a 10, I don't know what is. To me, this is a 10.
Okay, what do you say, Rebecca?
I say that even if I muted the whole thing, I would probably have come up with that dialogue on my own. Like, that's the kind of stuff I would have said, like, if I just watched it in the original language and not knowing what they were saying. The movie itself, I think I didn't know what was going on. They just kept, like, throwing in, like, you know, like the hell people and the, you know, there were henchmen from all over the freaking planet.
Incoherent.
I was just like, who goes to what? It took me forever to figure out that the King Dark, who was the normal size King Dark and was like kind of a light gray, that like when they went in the laboratory, like was a huge statue of just face in his hand, and it was a really dark gray.
And the mouth would just open up and close and open up.
The only clue that it was like the same entity was like the red eyes. That was about it.
Right.
Yes. No, I say this is a full on 10.
All right. Well, I guess that this will be the second 30 we're going to get this year, because yes, the first thought in my head was 10 and I might have changed it had you guys convinced me otherwise, because I was kind of looking for a reason to go a lower, you know, if somebody had convinced me that this was something lower than that. By the way, I've got my roommate's dog in my lap. He just climbed up. Yeah, he just climbed up in my lap. But yeah, so basically I would give it a 10, because this is just, I just didn't understand. Like, from the first beginning of the movie, I was like, I'm not going to like this movie, like, at all. Then all of a sudden it started warming up to me a little bit. Like, I started going, okay, I can watch this, you know, because I thought I was going to turn it off. I was just like, that's why I was laughing when you were talking about Lenore, because, like, I would have been the same way. If we had both been on the couch watching this, we would have looked at each other and said, this, can we, come on? Do we have to watch this, Paul? And you would have been like, yes, and you have to watch the whole thing. And so, you know, but yeah, I honestly, this was a bad movie. And definitely a 10. So this is the second 30 we've gotten this year already. And we've never gotten two 30s in a season. So something's going crazy this year. But first for Paul and,
Paul's going crazy. Paul is looking for 30s.
Actually, I was the one who did the first 30. And then he did the second 30. So he thought there was one that was going to get a 30 for me. Which one was that? The which one did you show me, Paul?
I don't remember.
Yeah, I didn't know what he rated it, and I didn't know what Lenore did, but both of them gave it a 10 each, and I gave it a 9 or something, you know? It was not, it didn't get a 10 from me. I didn't think it was that as bad as they were making it out. You know, so, but this one definitely.
Trust me, I have thought, you know, I could just do a whole show of nothing but tens.
Yeah.
You know,
but. And we would have to suffer through them.
Right.
But he wants to space them out. I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah, I want to space them out a little bit. But yeah, I try to make sure that, see, the thing is for me, even if it's a bad film, as long as I'm enjoying it, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
When I say bad, it has to be like the production has to be bad, the acting has to be bad, you know, terrible. You know, we've seen movies where you can't see anything because the lighting is bad. You know, the dubbing is bad. Everything is just terribly done, but it's still fun. To me, the cardinal sin of movie making, we've said this many times, is to be boring. So I try. I'm not always successful, but I try not to get
boring.
A movie that's boring, that you're just going to sit there and just you can't stand it because nothing's happening. You know, this, it's terrible, but I'll tell you what, there's something stupid happening every 10 seconds. There's no way you can be bored with this.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, this movie is like you said, kind of like, you know, I liked how you said acid, and then Rebecca had to go like a little further and say it was like a drug we've never even been on yet, you know, basically. And that's what this movie is. It's a drug you've never been on. And watching this movie, you're just like, what the fuck? This is what got me mad, is this is a perfect What the Fuck Friday, you know? And I was like, oh, you kind of missed an error, because like the whole time I'm going, what the fuck and what the hell, you
we've
know?
Already done this guy on What the Fuck Friday.
Well,
so
that's perfect. I like to do two people, you know, each, you know, sometimes, you know me, I did two Chris Seaver films a year apart from each other.
Chris Seaver.
Do you? Well, we could do another Chris Seaver movie on here.
We're gonna do Sex Squatch at some point, my favorite Chris Seaver movie.
But then bring me on.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll bring you on for that one for sure, because I definitely want to talk about that at some point too. So, you know, and I love Chris Seaver as well. We all do. That's actually how Paul and I bonded, is we were talking one day at a movie that we were both watching called
Record Store Massacre. Was that the one?
Yeah, but it wasn't Record Store Massacre, but it was something like
Music
that.
Store.
Music Store Massacre. And we were sitting next to each other, because that's where our friend April had us sit, because we were both guests of hers. And we sat down, and we just started chit-chatting. And he said he actually knew of Chris Seaver, and I didn't know anybody in Virginia that actually had watched any Chris Seaver movies. So there you go, you know. But yeah. Yeah, we'll have to do Sex Squatch at some point this year, and we'll definitely bring you on for that one.
Exquisite image.
Yes. but aside from that, this movie, to wrap it up, this movie is just balls to the wall, nuts, weird. Like, I think if you get a chance to watch it, definitely sit through the whole thing, because it just gets even nuttier. And the last thing I wanted to share, because I forgot to earlier, is the only reason it really reminded me, other than the look of the Kamen Riders or whatever, was of Power Rangers, was when they like all kind of, you know, became one, merged. Exactly. It reminded me of Power Rangers. Power Rangers, they do that. They merge into one, you know, one thing or whatever. So I don't know if Power Rangers took a lot of stuff from the Kamen, you know, writers and stuff.
Maybe not this movie. Maybe those entities, but not this particular film.
Not this
exactly.
Particular movie, probably.
Probably not. I don't think Power Rangers was like, hey, let's make, you know, let's do this movie and do it as a series. But it does look crazy, because like each character kind of, each writer kind of has a unique look to it, you know, or whatever. I mean, can you tell which Kamen Rider 1 is, like, without the person saying, hey, Kamen Rider 1, or
other than the fact that I saw before in another version where they were definitely talking that Kamen Rider 1 was Red Ant. That's the only reason I know. Now, I couldn't tell you the other ones.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I think in general, yes, they probably were in this movie. Not so much.
Right, because again, the intent was not to promote the Kamen Riders. The intent was to use them, and that's exactly what he ended up doing. But one thing I have to say is even though there are various dubs and various versions and various subtitle versions out there, I recommend that if you're going to watch this film, please find yourself the English dub, because it adds a whole other level of hilarity that is just unimaginable. It's just so funny. I just, you know, the first time I saw this, my jaw just hit the ground. It wasn't so much because of all the other action stuff or the other ridiculousness, but the dialogue was just unbelievable.
Yeah, it adds something to it.
Hysterical.
Yeah, I loved it. I was absolutely happy with it. Just as, you know, this is Neil Breen bad, you know, in a way,
exactly.
You know. And I know, Rebecca, I'm sorry. I think you got a soft spot for Neil Breen's movies and stuff, but, you know, a little bit.
I loved this. I loved it.
Yeah.
Even though it's horrible. Yeah. I'm good with that.
Okay, you're good with that comparison.
Neil, I'm good with Neil. Yeah, that's not a slam to me.
I have got a Neil Breen throw pillow for you.
Ooh,
see, I've been threatening to send that to Just Jen, and I even put it on her Facebook thing the other day, and she's like, nope, because she doesn't like them. But you, on the other hand, I'm going to have to find it for you.
Oh, my God, I'll take it.
Well, I guess that about wraps it up. Rebecca, thank you so much. Tell us about your podcast that you do.
Oh, well, my main podcast is In the Mic of Madness, where we do a lot of horror reviews. But we also have a spinoff within that show called SOBs Who Love SOV, where we review and talk about the lost classic shot on video movies of the 80s and the 90s. So
very nice.
Find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, the whole shit.
Have you done any Todd Jason Falcon movies and stuff?
Mm-mm.
Okay. He's fantastic. You gotta look him up sometime. He's done a few. Some of them are actually on Amazon, you can find. In fact, you know what? When I do one on Indie Film Cafe, I'll have you on that episode.
Hit me up.
Because I think you'll like it.
We're going to be needing another co-host. I mean, you know, Lenore's going to be leaving in August. So there you go.
I've got my recliner. I got my headphones. I'm good. I like that movie.
I mean, if you can survive this film, I'd say you could survive most of what I can show.
Exactly.
This is not even the worst of what I've seen this year. So.
Oh, God.
I do have to show you Roller Gator at some point because it's so awesome.
Yeah. Roller Gator?
Yes. Yeah.
Roller Gator? Oh, no. I totally freaking love Roller Gator.
Woohoo! You're so awesome. My kind of gal.
Oh, yes. Lord. Yes.
I was disappointed to find out it wasn't an alligator on roller skates.
Oh my God, that's exactly what I told Paul when I first saw it.
But when I watched it, I was like, oh, but he's like got this like wacky sense of humor and he rides in a backpack. I'm like, it's fine. I love it.
Well, I mean, his wacky sense of humor is like of a child, like a 12-year-old, you know, like nanny, nanny, nanny.
Mixed with like a 90-year-old, like, Jewish grandpa.
It is voiced by the director, Donald G. Jackson.
Oh, my goodness. And sometime, Paul, you got to show us Rollerblade.
Definitely.
You know, I want to see that. That's also done by Donald G. Jackson, and I've been dying to see that movie. Especially after we talked to Fred Olen Ray, and wasn't he, like, involved in that and stuff?
Oh, yeah, and his son was in it. And, you know, believe me, we would have gotten that done in season one. It was on my list. But, again, there's boobage aplenty in that. So, you know, I figured we'd have to get another co-host for that.
Yeah, Rebecca doesn't seem to mind that stuff, you know.
Double feature of roller stuff. I'm there.
All right, sounds great.
Well,
anybody who gets excited over, what was it, Mutilator.
Mutilator.
The Mutilator!
Mutilator, yeah. So you're right up our dark, scary alley.
Yes, we love it.
With the Roller Gator. Now there's a mashup we need.
There you go.
Roller Mutilator.
Nice. we were gonna do Roller Shark. We were gonna do it. Maybe we still will.
The Gator Later? You know, that just that sounded like see you later, alligator, but gator later. You know.
Speaking okay. of gator later, I guess we should cut this off. And thanks, everybody, for joining us here at Indie Film Cafe. We will see you next time. See you later, gator. Everybody say goodbye.
Bye.